There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it.
There you go.
With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. This is podcast number 1093, May 5th, 2025. Steven.
This F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads provide you, the F1Weekly.com web surfer, with ads that interest you. From tickets to the Canadian Grand Prix to ringtones for your cell phone, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Yahoo Ads. On today's program, Piastri wins again, and now is clearly the favorite for the championship. How long will Max last at Red Bull? LCH having his GP2 engine moment as Ferrari continue to be Ferrari. And Fernando and Aston Martin going nowhere slowly. Not fast, but slowly. It's almost really heartbreaking to watch. And today, more classic Nasser Hamid with another beautiful set of interviews. We're going to have a pair from Le Mans, 2009, Jackie Eakes, and René Arnoux. Yes, he's off. He's back again. And yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. So just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. I want to thank Xavier Pirtle and Brett Falk for their support. Thank you, gentlemen. So there you have it. Clearly, Piastri in charge at McLaren as Norris gets in touch with his feelings and being a super nice guy. But Max shouldn't have been on pole. His car is clearly, maybe on a single lap, it's quick, but in the race, he fell behind pretty quickly as Piastri passed him. Norris slowly, with a little tussle with Max at the beginning of the program or the race. But yes, very exciting. The sprint race, watching Fernando crash, the incident with Liam, I couldn't believe it, but certainly Norris did need a pick-me-up. And for LCH to be on the podium, that was really a big deal. He is now going into the deep, deep depression of how difficult it is to change teams when your entire career was at Mercedes. And I say that because McLaren was powered by Mercedes as well. It's the only motor he knew. So you have to start from scratch. The drivability of the motor, everything. That's why General Motors, or should I say Cadillac, is thinking of Juan Quanju. I can't pronounce his name, but he knows the Ferrari package, and he would be a perfect fit at Cadillac F1 next season. So the big question is Max really going to go to Aston Martin? Because, you know, Max is not motivated by money. And I don't think spending 300, 400 million euros is going to cope. I don't know. Adrian Newey is a swell guy, but he's no young man either. Still doing everything in pencil. It's just hard to fathom Aston Martin being dominant in 2026, especially with these new motors. There's just too much newness. And to be honest with you, I actually see Max staying at Red Bull because it's stability, he knows everybody, and you have to have some confidence in Ford with their long past involvement in motorsports and Le Mans and in Formula One. But great race. I'm happy for McLaren. I'm really getting sick of Zach Brown, but there's nothing I can do. And Yuki Tsunoda, always an excuse, but really the car has got to be terrible to drive. For me, the big team is Williams, slowly pecking at the order, slowly getting up into the top tens. I mean, an impressive qualifying, an impressive fifth place for Albon. I mean, maybe the ride in the Blue Angels helped a little bit. I don't know. But if you saw that film clip, that was pretty bizarre stuff, the way the Americans motivate themselves and pre-race or pre-flight. I don't know. I didn't understand a word of it. And I'm an American. So it was pretty interesting, but great Grand Prix. I like Miami just because of the ambiance. I'm really surprised that they continue to bring in Danica Patrick. I mean, she's pretty cool, but I don't know. She just repeats sort of the same thing over and over again. I like Jenson Button. He does a good job. Martin Brundle needs to stop wearing pants that are too tight for him. It's brutal, but a great race. And I can't wait for Imola because now we have maybe Doohan out, Colapinto in. That's the rumor, which I don't believe. Doohan brings in $10 million from a sponsor. Cash is king. So I do not see that happening. But I was very impressed with Piastri. I mean, he's forcing the issue. He's doing what he needs to do. And it's funny because Norris certainly is complaining about Max's little hustle at the beginning of the Grand Prix, but doesn't say anything about Piastri, who clearly is the best driver, especially with these time signatures. I mean, we're talking 1/1000ths of a second maybe separating some of these cars. So it's going to be an intense season, especially at Imola. If Piastri wins Imola, I'm telling you, he is now the dominant factor and number one, clearly. Now, we have to talk about LCH. The blathering, I mean, both cars were very similar. Letting Leclerc by, I know it hurt his feelings, but he saw the end result wasn't that fantastic. And that's why they switched positions again. But I just think he should control his radio messages because the sarcasm was just over the top. And maybe people understand now where Fernando was coming from when he was at McLaren and the frustration with the Honda package. So it's going to be good. It's really, really going to be good. And Mark Webber's got to be proud. Could you imagine an Australian Formula One world champion will be over the top. And he can live vicariously through Oscar Piastri. So very, very good race. The sprint race was just a little bit messy for me. And where was the rain? They kept saying 14 minutes we have rain. And it never arrived. That was Max's only opportunity, if there was one, to show up. So I don't know. I just wish Fernando would retire. I wish Lewis would retire. Bring in more rookies. I mean, look at Antonelli on pole for the sprint race. The youngest pole ever in Formula One at 18, beating Max Verstappen's young whippersnapper age. So we had a lot of good stuff this weekend. I'm not a sprint race fan. And I hope they start rethinking these things because the delay moved into delaying the qualifying. And I prefer a regular Grand Prix weekend like Max does. But on the other side, it was tough for Max. But he's staying he's much more polite now that he has a child. Congratulations, of course. Lily is in the world now, and the talk has begun a PK Verstappen phenomenon from maybe the first female world champion. Is this possible? Oh, I think it's possible. So very, very cool. It's fun watching Ferrari suffer, but you got to feel bad for Leclerc. He knows that his world championship hopes are slowly fizzling away. And I can't imagine what Ferrari is going to look like in 2026 with these crazy new rules. I mean, I know there's going to be a catch-up clause, and there will be a lot of needed catching up, because I know Mercedes there. Toto is laughing. He doesn't want any catch-up clause because he knows Mercedes is going to nail it as they did in 2014. So we'll see what happens. That's my tip of the week. Mercedes is really going to be the dominant ones. Now, I'm really surprised that they have not signed George. Now, is this a sign that Max is going to go to Mercedes? I don't see that happening. And the chemistry is just not there. Max is just too much to deal with. He is just so, I don't know, demanding, perhaps is the wrong word. But Max at Mercedes, even James Vowles has been saying it and saying it and saying it. Please, Mercedes, don't take Max. So I think they should sign. And of course, their new protege, Antonelli, is just getting better and better and better. He just needs to work on those starts. I know he was perturbed by Piastri, but Piastri is now, he understands why Max does what Max does, and he's going to start doing it too. He's doing it now. He's winning Grand Prix. And like I said, if he wins in Imola, there's just no stopping him. He will be world champion at the end of this season. I mean, for sure, McLaren has the constructors wrapped up already. They're so far ahead, and we're only six races into this season. So the summer break will be good when it comes, and I can't wait till we get back to the big tracks, Monza and Spa. Franco Sean. So those are my two pennies. We have a great classic Nasr Hamid on this program, Jackie Eakes. And Jackie Eakes, of course, still around, recently interviewed by Nasr at the Historics at Monaco, but obviously his age was catching up with them. So this is really a lucid Jackie Eakes. Great interview, fantastic. And of course, Rene Arnoux, 1979 Dijon Prenois, is always good to listen to because his enthusiasm is outstanding. Now, last weekend, we had the historic Masters Formula One races and other maybe support races at Paul Ricard. And of course, Zach Brown was there racing and other people, including Rene Arnoux. It was really, it provided a lot of great photographs, great, interesting backgrounds, and Rene Arnoux was still on it. But I believe Zach Brown won one of the races. So congratulations to him. I want everybody to listen to these wonderful interviews. And once again, Nasr, I miss you every day. Thank you.
And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and Nasr Hamid. Nas, welcome to the studio. How was the trip to La France, Le Mans, Peugeot?
Come on.
It must have been exciting.
Well, the trip was on a scale of 1 to 10, around 12 plus.
That's usually a good France trip.
Yeah, it was excellent. And I tell you, it's good to be back in Cali. And hello to everyone. Nice to know. This was the best part of my, when I came back, that my day job and my fantasy job, which is right here at the palatial head office of F1 Weekly, are still there and not outsourced yet to Rangoon or Cameroon, which would have been real Sol Makosa.
Exactly. Well, Max was trying to get us to move, but we fought him.
He fought the law and won.
Exactly.
So what are you now, Clark?
To do a budget cap too.
Yeah. So what's your name now, Clark Forta Rogers?
No, we're sticking with the Duke of Dijon.
Okay, that's fine. And of course, long trip, fighting some jet lag, but very glad that I was forced into this vacation. This vacation was not on the at least on my personal agenda. And I must say, you know, after being there for a few days, land of Fromage is fantastic and people very helpful. So very, very pleasant trip. And I now have a better understanding of your fondue fantasies. Well, I have a few of my own, and top of the list now is to get back there as soon as possible.
Our shout-outs last week, let's get through them now. The podcasters at F1Weekly.com.
And now, for this podcast special interview, Nass, please introduce this legendary race car driver.
Well, you know, the name says it all. Name does not need an introduction. Jackie Iggs. Say a few things about his career. First of all, this conversation took place at Le Mans. My sincere thanks to him for his time and sharing his memories of winning races all over the world. He was in Formula One with Ferrari at the young age of 23, which speaks volumes for his talents. He won races in the top tier, starting with the 1968 French Grand Prix at Rouen, a legend at Le Mans with 6 victories. He was Can-Am champion here in the U.S., winner of Bathurst 1000 in Land Down Under, and in the dunes of Africa in the Dakar Rally. So this is gentleman has done and won anything and everything.
Like the Triple Crown twice over.
Yeah, exactly. He now resides in Monte Carlo, and special thanks to his daughter, Miss Larissa, who made this interview possible. So I hope our listeners enjoy this conversation with a true legend of motor racing, Mr. Jackie Iggs of Belgium.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Le Mans with the legend of legends, Mr. Jackie Iggs. Jackie, first of all, thank you very much. Great pleasure to meet you. How are you today?
Well, today with the privilege to meet someone from the United States, originally from Pakistan. Well, it's a great pleasure because we are in an unbelievable location, the 24th of Le Mans, as you said.
Absolutely. This is a magical place for you with so many victories. What comes to your mind first when you arrive here or any time a conversation comes up about Le Mans?
Well, first you have to know that I came here for the first time in 1966 as a competitor. So it's a long time ago. That's more than 40 years ago, obviously. And, of course, we all come back here with a lot of passion and emotion because we all love the race, because it's an unbelievable race.
Your daughter, Vanina, is one of the drivers this year. How involved have you been in guiding her career?
Well, I've not been involved at all. She went to high school, she went to university, she made her degree in biology. And when she was 23, she decided to go into racing, and she did it on her own. I never was her coach.
Her decision to go racing after attending university, was that a surprise to you?
A big surprise. I didn't expect it, and she never told me that she wanted to become a race driver.
Are you happy she is one now?
Well, you know, provide someone does what he likes to do. The father isn't there to like it or not. She has to be happy, and obviously what she likes is to be driving and driving high and fast cars. And that's what she does in Le Mans. She drives an LMP1, that is one of the fastest cars, and she's the only woman on board. And yes, I think she loves it, and I'm very proud of what she does.
At the age of 17, you were a factory rider for Zündapp. Please tell us a little bit about your career on two wheels and how did this deal come about? You were so young.
Well, there is not much to say except that at that age, frankly, I love motorcycle racing, and I thought I was going to become most probably a racing motorcycle race driver. I thought I was going to do Grand Prix in motorcycle, and amazingly when I was 18 everything turned down by the fact that I had opportunities to drive cars, and as you know you cannot do motorcycle and cars at the same time. So when you are 18 and you have the possibility to drive cars reasonably well and successfully, that's the way I choose.
Now what is amazing about your career is that within 5 years you were in Formula One with Ferrari of all the teams. How old were you when you decided to become a professional driver, or this decision was never made because it came so natural?
Frankly, I never wanted to be to become a race driver originally. I would have loved to be a gardener or... You know, these people who keep the hunting place and nature and so on. And I didn't decide that really. It just happened, and in this time to climb up through the different class of motor racing, you had to be successful. It was like going to school in a way. The first one was sure to go to the next class, and as you said, reasonably quickly I was in Formula One and probably one of the youngest in Formula One.
You credit Ken Tyrrell for changing your life. How was your experience in Formula 2 with his team?
More I go, more I get older, more I realize the importance of Ken Tyrrell. Yes, definitely he has been the key of my success in Formula 1. Ken Tyrrell at the time has real credit to pick up talents in motor racing. And when he decided to let me run in Formula 3, Formula 2, yes, it was really a big opportunity. And it's only after the time has run and everything is behind us, because he disappeared, unfortunately, a few years ago, you realize how important can be someone in your life. And definitely, if my life has been, as you are mentioning, successful. Yes, he played a key role in it, without any doubt.
Great. On July 10th, 1967, Ken told you about his plans for a Formula One team for 1968, and the next day you get a call from Franco Lini, Ferrari team manager. How did that make you feel?
Well, you seem to be extremely well-informed, and but the reality, yes, he wanted to have a two-car team with me and Jackie Stewart, but unfortunately it didn't work. It didn't work because the Matra he was going to use wanted a French driver, so there were no room for me in the team, and I think he regretted it, and me too. But at the same time, I had an offer from Ferrari to join Ferrari, and you know, when you are 22 or 23 years old, and Ferrari calls you and say, would you agree to drive my cars? It's something you don't refuse. And even after all these years, still my heart beats for Ferrari, because it was really a good time. Maybe not very successful as it should have been, but yes, it's plenty of good memories.
You know, at that age, in your era, it was very, very rare somebody would get into a top team at that age. Did you have a manager, or who was basically doing the deals for you?
Frankly, I think, honestly, at the time, no one had a manager. The first one to have a... I'm not even saying a manager. The first one who had a lawyer was probably Jackie Stewart at the time. Drivers were going, the money was not the key role of the sport. The important thing was to run, to drive, and to be happy. The money didn't play an important role. These things were fairly easy at the time. But yes, I was young going into it, and I was very proud that the Commendatore gave me the first choice, in a way.
Now, in 1967 German Grand Prix, this was your first Formula One race in a Formula Two Matra, and this is so impressive. You qualified third behind only Jim Clark and Denny Holm. What was your feeling? You must have felt that, hey, I've arrived here.
No, I don't think you can say that, because you have to know, still today the Nürburgring and the Nordschleife still exist. They are still racing on it, and it's still the most complicated race course in the world. But it's a fact that I knew the race course very well. And frankly, I do believe that driving a Formula 2, a good Formula 2 at the time, with the knowledge I had about the race course, it's much easier in a way to drive a Formula 2 than a Formula 1. Because you have to know that the Nürburgring at the time is 22 kilometers long. We were jumping on the track 17 times. That means the car was flying on bumps, and it was difficult.
How good was the Matra car you drove to Formula 2 Championship in 1967, and who were the main competitors for you?
In 67, I drove two different Matras, one of the new type and one of the old type. When I was able to drive the latest chassis, it was used normally by Jackie Stewart, frankly, he had the best car on the course. But the championship, I did it with the two cars. And we were successful, that's for sure, because we won a number of races. We were a European champion. And I think Dunlop played a key role in that, because Dunlop was really very efficient at the time.
Your first Grand Prix win came in 1968 in tragic circumstances at Rouen when Joe Schlesser was killed. What do you remember most from that race and day?
Sadness.
Absolutely. What was
just
the
motive? Sadness. I won, but everybody was sad. I was sad. One of us disappeared in motor racing in dreadful conditions, and no one was having fun at all, and it could have been much nicer without having that dreadful accident, but these accidents was part of the job at the time. That mean there were a large number of accidents every year, and it was quite usual to lose one or two drivers a year, talented drivers. So we felt terribly sorry.
In 1969, we're talking at this place, you started last after walking to your Ford GT40 before the start of the race here at Le Mans. Was this pre-planned or something you decided at the last minute?
No, it was planned. Maybe it was surprising, that's quite right, but no, it was planned already, because the basic difficulty of Le Mans is to cruise over 200 miles per hour at the start, without having the possibility to wear your seatbelts on. That means in case of accident, you would have been killed immediately. So I decided to wait until everybody goes and take my time, put the seatbelts on, and then start. After, the story was different, because obviously I start last and we finish first.
Now, when you say it was decided, was John Wyer aware of this, that you would be doing this?
I don't think so. No, because I didn't mention it to anyone. Though it was a total effect of surprise.
Yeah, talking of John Wyer, very famous in sports car racing, how was he to deal with?
In the English way, that means pure racing tradition. He was the man of the Aston Martin. He was involved in racing for a long time, but you have to know that even if you call it professional at the time, all the teams were, compared of motor racing today, they were real amateurs. No mobile home, no big trucks, no nothing, and it was very charming.
Can one decide who has more passion for motor racing, the British or the Italians?
Oh, they have the same passion, but they express it in different ways.
Very true. Okay, after Jochen Rindt was killed at Monza in 1970, what was on your mind regarding the championship? Was it something you wanted to win under the circumstances?
Well, it looks strange, but I never wanted to win the championship that year, and I didn't, and I think it was well written that way, because obviously Jochen Rindt scored the highest number of points. Luckily, I was even on points behind him, but you have to remember that being killed in Monza, he had no chance, of course, to defend himself. And I think the story is well written on that aspect. Jochen Rindt was the first champion, first world champion, who unfortunately died during the season. And I'm extremely pleased that it finished that that way, because I would not have been happy about being world champion with someone, a competitor who wasn't there anymore. No, it's well done that way. I'm happy.
You know, in this day and age, teammates don't talk to each other. And in the old days, it was, you know, you would talk to everybody. Who were some of your good friends when you were racing in Formula One?
You know, you have to remember the motor racing, it's still a selfish and individualist sport. But it's correct to say that at the time, as there were no sponsors, the finance was not the key role of the idea of racing. And has saying in a way, even being called professional, we were real amateurs. We were all staying in the same hotel. We had dinner or lunch together very often. And let's put it that way. Yes, it was human.
Of your 6 victories here at Le Mans, why is the 1977 win so special?
Because that was the most unbelievable win in motor racing. From a definitely lost race, we won it. And I think we all drove exceptionally well that evening in dreadful conditions, rain, fog, for almost the whole night, because we were last at the start with mechanical trouble, because I swapped cars from my own to the other sister car. And then we just did an incredible race. Even the engineer, the mechanics could not believe it will turn that way.
You were once quoted as saying about Ferrari, confusion is permanent, the car is never at fault, nor the engineer, Mauro Forghieri. The driver is always guilty. What was the environment at other teams like Tyrrell and Brabham compared to Ferrari?
Did I say that?
That's why I said you were quoted at, so I'm not sure. It's in a magazine that I picked it up.
No, well, frankly, we had some very good years with Ferrari, some bad ones. Some years the car was really the best possible one, the next one not. And it's because I think at the time to build a racing car was very, we say in French, empiric. An engineer knew how to design a car. Either he was successful, then it's successful. You think, now I know the trick to make it right, I will improve it, and the next day it was worse than the first one. But it was a little more or less that for everyone. There was a little small minor fault on racing, and I think we lose a large number of races because, unfortunately, we lost races on details more than... it was not a fact that the efficiency of the car wasn't right. But frankly, my terms with Ferrari during these 5 years with the old man... I was always very well treated, and it still remains one of my best memories in motor racing.
Niki Lauda called Mauro Forghieri, the engineer there, a genius but a madman. How was your experience in dealing with him? He was there for such a long time.
He's surely not a genius. He was unpredictable, that's for sure. But he did his job with a lot of passion.
In 1977, this really surprised me. You won the Bathurst 1000 way down in Australia with Alan Moffat. How did this deal come about, and your thoughts on Mount Panorama track? And I ask this question because we have a lot of listeners in Australia.
I don't remember how I met Alan Moffat. I think I met Alan Moffat maybe in United States or in other races in Europe, but he was a hero. Alan Moffat was a hero in Australia. And also... the equivalent of Le Mans is, as you said, the Bathurst, the Hardy Ferrodo 1000 in Bathurst. And that race was covered by TV nonstop. And it was just unbelievable. He was a real star. And I had the chance to drive with him at that race in cars who were not easy to drive, but he drove with a lot of talent, really. He was very fast, much faster than I was, but I did what I could do with him to win that race. So that's one of the strange races I have won in a way with Alan Moffat, great driver.
1979, you won the Can-Am Championship with Carl Haas. How much did you enjoy racing in North America and your favorite track there?
Very much, because Carl Haas is one of the most charming person and team boss. Oh, it was nice. him and Bernie really handled their team for many, many, many years with many, many different drivers, always successfully. And he's not only a team leader, he's a nice person, sweet, friendly, and it's quite surprising in that motor racing world.
Now, I asked Patrick Tommy this question, so I'm going to ask you also. Did you ever bring him any Cuban cigars?
No. Oh, maybe. Not Cuban, but maybe Monte Cristo, because I think he loved Monte Cristo very much. Yes, he never smoked them, you know that. He never smoked his cigar. He was chewing his cigars. That's the reality.
He's still doing the same. Okay, among the various teammates you've had over the years, your thoughts on a great American legend, Mario Andretti, as a racer and friend?
We had a nice and short collaboration. We drove together in 72, I believe, the 312 PB, and I think we won almost all the races of the series, probably 5 out of 6. We were unbelievably successful. I think we were the perfect balance in a way. We were extremely fast, extremely safe, and with a great car. So we won a lot. And as you know, Mario is probably the only driver actually on this planet who has been able to drive all sorts of cars, not only from long distance or Formula One where he was world champion, but he drove NASCAR, stock car. He had that unbelievable facility to be quick and efficient in every category.
With victories at Le Mans, Nürburgring 1000 and the Dakar Rally in 1983, which one is toughest to win?
They're all tough to win. A win is difficult. The Dakar is probably the longest and the toughest race physically, but they're all difficult, frankly.
If you could go back in time, and doesn't have to be a victory, if you could do one race in your life that gave you the most satisfaction, what, or maybe a two or three, what would come to your mind?
The only one, Le Mans 77.
That gives you the biggest satisfaction.
Yes.
Okay, some thoughts on what's happening in Formula One these days. How do you look at Formula One? Are you still following it, the passion you had?
Frankly, I don't follow it closely, so I don't have the right information about what goes on, but for sure it's a strange planet today.
Any thoughts on some of the young talents who are in racing, like Sebastian Vettel, Hamilton?
There are plenty. That's the nicest thing about it. It's sport. It's in the hands today of young kids, extremely talented and intelligent. If you look around in Formula One, the average year it's between 20 and 25. Formula One is difficult, but these kids are driving it with an unbelievable amount of skill.
So a young driver, let's say 18, 19 years old, same level of talent, would it be easier to get into Formula One today or in your era?
I think you have to start. I think first you have to start at the age of 8 doing karting if you want to be in. But I think to become a race driver today, it's much more difficult than it was 40 years ago. It's tough today because you have plenty of talented people surrounding you.
If I may ask, what's a day like in the life of Jackie Hicks these days?
Nice and peaceful, because, you know, there is something I can't complain about my life, is that I received so much more than I could expect. I never thought my life was going to be as successful and as nice as it is. Plus, the privilege that I'm still alive, and I have to realize that I went through all these years with a lot of mileage of motor racing without being hurt badly. And I think really my guardian angel worked very hard for me, that I'm convinced, and I'd like to thank him.
Thank you so much. Great honor, pleasure. Finally, how about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly? And we have listeners in Belgium also, kid you not.
Well, I think it's a dream to have people surrounded by people who are listening to you about news of the world and Oh, I have the passion about motor racing and sport and being interested in what other people are doing. And I think that's a privilege in life to have a passion for something.
Jackie Eakes, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
Hi, I'm Elio Castro Neves, four-time Indy 500 champion, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
For all those years he tried, they said he wasn't right. They left him in the night to win a bitter fight. He knew they couldn't know, they'd never seen his show. And in a final throw, he wrote his last tango. For all those years he tried, they said he wasn't right. They left him in the night to win a bitter fight. He knew they couldn't know, they'd never seen his show.
Greetings and racing regards. They say it takes two to tango, and let's hope the last tango in Paris will bring peace in our time, at least in Formula One. Common sense has finally prevailed and civil war averted. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, it looks like General Montezemolo and General Mosley finally came to terms, and I think they went into an old rail car and signed some kind of armistice.
Did Montezemolo come through the Maginot Line, or did he fly in?
I don't know, but there was a lot of Maginot Lines being built in the last few weeks, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I'm guessing Bernie walks into the meeting, walks up behind Max, goes, shut up, give them what they want, because I want them racing next year in my championship.
Or I'm going to put a stop on that check.
Yeah, exactly. No more money for you.
You know, Danny Sullivan once said that in racing, when the music stops, Penske always has a chair. And I've seen in Formula One, when the music stops, Mr. Ecclestone has a sofa.
Yeah.
Whatever he wants goes at the end. Have you noticed that?
Well, it's his series. He understands without these main eight teams, the series is pretty much stinko.
Well, not only that, but he's the money man.
Yeah, that's why I don't understand why Max Mosley is such a dictatorial, hard-headed, strange dude.
Well, you know,
because it's the only power he has.
What goes around comes around. It was Bernie. Mosley was Bernie's lawyer when they had the Jean-Marie Balestre schmozzle going on. They forced him out, and now they got a taste of their own medicine.
Exactly.
So that's how it goes.
You would think that if they would just study their history a little bit, they would realize they were reaching those lines.
Yeah, exactly. You can only push so much.
Are you between the ages of 8 and 80 and want to experience the thrill of wheel-to-wheel racing for yourself? Do you want a hobby that you, your family, or group of friends can share? The Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series, sponsored in part by Marin Karting, is the fast-growing Northern California series of the Rotex Max Challenge USA and can lead to an FIA-approved world championship. Rotex answers your dream of racing. With a reliable engine that's sealed, keeps carts on the same level playing field, your operating costs low, your fun level high, and your skill determining your success. Be your own number one driver as part of the Jim Russell Northern California Rotex Challenge Series. Race on to NorCalRotex.com to learn more. And see MarinKarting.com for Rotex engines, parts, and accessories.
Hi, hello, I'm Jean Lizzy, and you are listening F1 Weekly.
And now, interview of the week, Mr. René Arnoux.
And he's close right up on Villeneuve, and he's going to try again. They're coming into the start of the last lap behind Jochen Maas in the A2 Arrows. And Arnoux does it, does he? And Villeneuve locked up. And Villeneuve has had to go wide, and Arnoux's on the inside as they go round Villeroy. He's got the shorter line. He's got second position. He's got second position. He's through. They bang wheels. He's off. He's off. And he's back again.
René Arnoux, his name will forever be linked with one of the greatest battles in the history of motor racing. And we all know what we're talking about.
We certainly do.
Dijon Prenois, 1979. Arnoux was born in Grenoble and started racing karts in Italy. And he's fluent in Italian, and he used to do commentary for Italian TV for years and years. Maybe still doing it. In 1977, he won the European Formula 2 Championship over Eddie Cheever and Didier Pironi. His first Grand Prix win came in Brazil in 1980. He also won races for Ferrari, and these days he owns several indoor karting centers in France. And interestingly, this conversation took place while both of us were waiting for food at a trackside restaurant. And this was my basically last stop before I left the track. And I saw him standing there with his daughter. And I just, you know, pounced on him. I says, "Hey, Dijon Prenois 1979. And he goes, "Best race in the world." So that's how we started talking. So I asked him, "Hey, can we do an interview after you have eaten?" He said, "No, we can do it right now." So this interview was in the food lane of a trackside burger joint. And it was very nice talking to him. Enjoyed the conversation very much. And I thank him for his time. And hope our listeners enjoy a conversation with the man who was involved in the thick of battle at Dijon 79. Thank you.
Okay, folks, I'm here with the man who was involved in Dijon Prenois 1979.
Best race in the world.
This is René Arnoux, and what kind of a race was this?
It was the best race in the world in 79 with Gilles Villeneuve and René Arnoux.
And that's you. I love that race. We talk about it all the time. Question is, did you ever have any concern that the car will break down or something will go wrong and you will not finish the race?
No, I think each driver asks a lot by the car. But, you know, when you are in the middle of the crowd, it was exactly the day we asked everything we have with the car. The car was perfect. But my car, when I passed the starting grid, it was destroyed. But I finished the race, and I said to my car, "Thank you very much to give me this possibility to finish the race with Gilles."
Now, you were good friends with Gilles. What did he say to you after the race?
After the race, a lot of people said, "You finish with the box." And we have a very straight. And it was, Gilles was a big smile, and me too. The man who is not really happy about this race was Jabouille, because nobody remembers that he was winning the race. And everybody speak about the duel before Gilles and me after the race.
Yeah, you know, that was the first turbo win.
Exactly.
What is Jean-Pierre Jabouille doing these days?
It was for Renault, and for the sponsor, was fantastic day, because Jean-Pierre wins the race. I finished third. And it was a very good result for the first time with Renault with the turbocharged engine. Mm-hmm. The problem for Jean-Pierre, it's we canceled the victory about the name of Mr. Jabouille, because everybody was speaking about these 5 laps before the end with Gilles and René Arnoux. Yeah. But the race is the race at this time. Now, if you do the same thing, you have 5 years with you in commandy prison.
Okay, 1982 Monza, you won the race. I was at that race. The question I have, I was watching the BBC coverage recently, and you know, Murray Walker, the English commentator, he said that René Arnoux on that weekend with Renault, you had lunch with the Ferrari team. Is that correct?
No. I don't have a lunch with the Ferrari team. In Monza, the sport director of Ferrari, after the last practice on Saturday, said René Arnoux had signed with Ferrari for next year, 53. I remember one thing in Monza, very interesting, because I win the race. I think that second was Tambay and the third was Andretti.
Right.
And the second and the third was two drivers of Ferrari.
Yeah.
And on a Monday morning, I see the newspaper in Italy. He said, three Ferrari drivers on the podium. Because at the end on Saturday, the people of Ferrari said René Arnoux has signed for 83. it was a nice...
The same year, 1982, at Paul Ricard Circuit, you won the race over Alain Prost.
Exactly.
Question for you. Were there team orders for you to slow down? Did you see the sign, or what's the story there?
Yes, but I have the same contract about Prost and me, not second and first driver. And you know, when you have a possibility to drive and to win the race, exceptionally for this my birthday, 4th July was my birthday.
4th July is your birthday?
And I yeah, Exactly. And I win the race, and I said to Prost, bye-bye. Ciao, bye-bye.
Okay, I guess he was not a happy camper.
It's his problem, not my problem. But my problem was to win the race.
Okay. Are you in touch with Alain Prost, or you guys don't talk to each other now?
When after?
These days.
Huh?
These days, today, are you friends with him now?
Yes. He's not my best friend in Formula One. I prefer Mansell or Gerhard Berger. Gilles was a very good driver and very good friend of mine, but he's not here. And I check his hand, and that's all.
Yeah. Okay, now these days you are running a couple of karting places in France. Are you involved in them on a daily basis?
Anna?
You have karting centers in France, right?
Yeah. Four cities.
Yeah. Do you go there on a regular basis?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes I stay with when the company ask if I have a possibility to stay 1 or 2 hours. I stay with the company and I run, and it's really interesting. It's always the go kart. It's my life. When I start to drive, it's the best school to go kart. A lot of people in Formula One start by the go kart. And sometime I drive again. Yeah.
Going back to Dijon 79, have you ever listened to the BBC commentary with Murray Walker? He's off, he's on. Have you ever listened to it?
I remember. I see. I have the last five laps with
Murray Walker.
Voice of Murray Walker. It's really interesting. Everybody was very exciting,
yeah.
Like the driver in the car.
Looking back on your career, apart from Dijon 79, what other moments stand out for you?
Now?
No, when you, in Formula One, when you look back, what other good memories you have apart from Dijon Prenois 79?
My best memory is to work with some mechanics, engineer, and when you must to drive to race, but the best thing for me in Formula One is before the race to work with a very strong engineer, with a very strong mechanics, and I was mechanic before, and I have a very very high respect about these people, and this is my best time to see in Ferrari the people we build the car. Ferrari built 100% of the car, and I spent a lot of time in the factory to see the people to work on each part of the car. This is interesting.
That's where I met you in September 1982. Question, Didier Pironi, were you friends with him? Can you tell us a little bit about him as a person?
Yeah, I was a good friend with Didier too, because we raced in Formula 2 together. But I don't stay in Formula 1 in the same team with Didier. Because he had a big bad crash in Hockenheim, but he was a good friend of mine. That's all.
Thank you very much, merci beaucoup. What a pleasure to meet you.
Bonne année, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Now we go right to the wrap up. Nasser has got a correction on an email.
Yeah, thanks to our regular listener, Mr. Gary Shevard in Israel. He sent me an email correcting me on the report on Le Mans when I said Naren Karthikeyan raced there. And unfortunately, Naren's race went down the drain.
He was injured, I think.
Yeah, but just before the start of the race, he wanted to make a last-minute run to the loo, also known as restroom, and while climbing the pitfall, I believe, hurt his shoulder or something. So he did not race. He was entered, but did not race. So I thank Gary for listening and the correction.
I like that. Not too sophisticated of an injury, but you have to go, you have to go.
Exactly.
Thank you, gentlemen. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. From myself, Steve, and Nasser, good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs. We'll be right back.